Looking for your next go-to smoke shop? Stop scrolling, I've got you. Headshop.com is the number one online smoke shop, already trusted by over 100,000 happy smokers, just like you. They've got it all. Dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, even THCA flower, all in one place. Need a new daily driver? Grab a smooth glass bong or a classic smoking pipe. More of a concentrate fan? Their dab rigs, e-rigs, and wax accessories are designed for smoother, harder-hitting sessions. And yes, they've even got legal THC flower. Best part? Every order ships fast and discreet, which is why thousands of smokers keep coming back. So don't waste time hopping between shops. Shop the best in dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, and THCA flower right now at headshop.com, the number one online smoke shop. Headshop.com has what you need. Check it out today. Oh, and because you're listening right now, you get 10% off your next order when you use the coupon code HSHOP at checkout. Go to headshop.com now and smoke smarter.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. Bullies often think of themselves as straight shooters, though most are just rude pricks who lack etiquette and are completely up their own ass. It's difficult to get across to such types without risking a scene, as they're usually immature and prone to violent outbursts when they don't get their way. Often, a bully grew up bullied by a parent or older siblings, but sometimes a bully or a so-called straight shooter simply enjoys breaking others down. Like an onion, picking through protective barriers layer by layer, stripping away any ability to fend off the relentless revealing of softer, sweeter, more translucent parts, chopping and dicing and mincing their victims to mush, false tears streaming down the perpetrator's face. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. The Peeler. Have you ever met a crazy person who thinks everyone else is crazy? Of course you have. Nefarious narcissists, conceited crazies, the type who relates every single situation to themselves in some way. Of course you have. Read a comment section of any Instagram or YouTube video. Oh, you mentioned Canada? Can confirm in the comment section, Canadian here. Fun fact, actually, we prefer long, pedantic, self-serving explanation incoming of how well they understand the context of anything Canada just by being born here and having walked around for 20 years in a dipshit, soaked bubble. That's a form of narcissism, when everything has an answer plucked from the top of the fat head, when everything seems to somehow revolve around them, when it's tough to get a word in and the only one accepted without issue has to be tailored to stroke their ego or tiptoe around their sensibilities. Of course, we all have a little of this in us. I mean, look at me, coming out the gates guns blazing, oversimplifying narcissism for my own stylish and salacious statement to somehow seem succinct and sublime. But truly, aren't you sick of it? Aren't you sick of blowhards breaking the world to pieces with their aversion to peace and propensity to perverse the world for their own personal pleasure? I'm sorry. When I get upset, I become hyperbolic and use alliteration. It calms me down. Also, if I feel I'm being too, what was the word I used? Pretentious? No, it was fancier than that. Pedantic. Then I insert a little humor. Anyways, writer here, you all wouldn't understand. On that insufferable note, and end to my prepared performance and the practice of being patronizing and pretending to be a psychopath, a crazy person, which I'm not, let me introduce the queen of such behavior, Sheila LaBarre, whose victims, like mine and you just now, suffered a great deal in captivity before finally hearing enough and leaving. Or attempting to. But wait, Sheila eventually figured out that choosing acquaintances and lovers who were intellectually delayed delayed their flight from her. But they still squirmed in her grasp, which pissed her off royally, and this is how she became the queen of her own castle, executing any who dared to threaten or even think of desertion. Sheila couldn't stand the smell of abandonment, so she beat on her victims both mentally and physically to wash them of the stench, brainwash them, to ensure they couldn't do it while they had to still be able to do it in the sexual sense. She was a sadist and sick and insatiable when it came to sex. Psychiatrists later hypothesized that an abusive upbringing was to blame, where Sheila developed a twisted belief that all men, deep down, were pedophiles. Or, more likely, she wanted to believe this in order to justify doling out abuse herself by playing the role of an avenging angel. On top of all this, I believe the biggest issue is that Sheila is, well, if I may be problematic for a moment, the biggest bitch in the whole world. But was she hot, though? Yes, Sheila was hot, and that made it easy to lure slow men into her web, tie them up and slowly suck them dry in every way imaginable. But quickly, Sheila LaBarre was born Sheila K. Bailey on July 4th, 1958, and raised in Fort Payne, Alabama, a mill town with a population of about 13,000. She was the youngest of six children. Her dad worked for the state of Alabama in the Highway Road Division. He was an alcoholic and was violent towards Sheila, her sister, and her mother. Sheila's father was not only abusive physically to Sheila, but also sexually to a high degree. He would go so far as to bring men into the house to sexually abuse his daughter and Sheila, starting at the age of two, and made Sheila call these men that were sexually abusing her uncle. Her mom, Ruby Bailey, worked in environmental services at the hospital. She described Sheila later as smart and the one who never really got into any trouble, although trouble was all around her, so getting into it wasn't a problem. Sheila didn't have many friends as a child other than her uncles, but as she got older, she blossomed in middle school, high school. She was very attractive and entered a junior Miss Beauty pageant. She tried to become a country music sensation later on as well. She graduated from high school in 1976 and had plans to become a fashion model. That dream was eventually squashed after a series of bad relationships. After high school, she worked as a housekeeper in a local motel with her sister Lynn, and then as an assistant administrator at a nursing home where, who knows what the fuck she did. You see, I've explained in the beginning that she was sadistic, and I believe a lot of people who work in nursing, who work as police officers, as teachers, anyone in social services, some of them are drawn to the trade because they have power over other people. And I believe she was one of them. Many of her bad relationships turned into bad marriages. During the 1980s, she married Ronald Jennings, and within minutes of the ceremony, she turned to him and said, "We shouldn't have gotten married." Sheila became violent towards Jennings, who described her later as beautiful but unbalanced. "She was just crazy," he said. During an argument, for an example of the reasons why in which he thought she was crazy, she threatened to stab him to death while he slept. He stayed awake all that night. She wanted a divorce eventually, get half his money, and when he wouldn't give her the divorce, she took a bottle of pills and washed them down with wild turkey. I think I bought that one time and couldn't figure out why the fuck I had bought it. Wild turkey just makes you, I mean, it's for turkeys to go wild. And she drank this wild turkey in front of him, washing down the pills. She was taken to the University of Alabama at Birmingham Medical Center, where they pumped her stomach, and she was in a coma for 8 days as a result of this suicide attempt. After coming out of the coma, she claimed that she had resurrected into an avenging angel of God. Those two, they eventually moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee, where they divorced after 4 long years of marriage, and Jennings, he lost track of her from there. There were many men who were attracted to Sheila, but she preferred to find her partner using personal ads in newspapers and magazines. So, Sheila is on the hunt for a man who will take care of her financially, and she'll just run the roost. This is her goal in life. She wanted to be in charge of the relationship and thought that by using personal ads and finding these relationships going forward, she could weed out the ones who would not be submissive to her. In 1987, she answered an ad placed by a man named Bill LaBar by sending nudes of herself, which were pretty hot. Dr. Wilfred Bill J. LaBar was born in Norwich, Connecticut in 1926. After the war, he attended chiropractic school and was licensed to practice in 1953. Living in Epping, New Hampshire, he was amongst a population of 7,000 people. He was a health officer and established the Straight Chiropractic Clinic in nearby Hampton. He owned a 115-acre horse ranch on Red Oak Hill Lane, just north of Epping. Dr. Bill's first wife, Edwina, died in 1983, and he quickly remarried a woman named Leone, but she left him after a couple of years. He's not the best-looking guy. I mean, to me, he's a good-looking guy. As a guy, not gay or anything, but to me, I like a guy with a big nose. Something about a big... He's got a big nose. And I think that guys with big noses strike me because I know they've taken some shit for that nose. And it's like a confidence thing that the nose enters the room, the nose enters the conversation first. And it's like, they're very striking to me, men who have big noses. I know maybe many women don't feel that way, but they should, because a man with a big nose, or a balding man as well, who has confidence, is one who has had to overcome something that is directly on their fucking head. It's in your face. And they know that you're seeing this thing, all right? And they're still in your fucking face and present. I just love a bald man with a big nose. And this is who this man was. And also highly intelligent. So he had, not that fucking smart. He gets involved with this bitch, and she is a bitch. I know that word is not easily swallowed as I spit it, but massive bitch. He had a vasectomy after having a daughter and a son with Edwina. In 1987, he was a lonely 60-year-old man, once widowed, once divorced. Sheila was 29. When she reached out to him with her tits out. After receiving her response to his ad, he went to visit her in Tennessee a few times. Within months, she moved into his farm, which was located well off a main road on a rutted dirt road that led into the woods, the biggest property in town. Dr. Bill was a highly respected chiropractor and loved by his patients, the whole town. Sheila was a flashy, loud bitch. She liked attention, was quickly noticed for seeking this attention. She gained the nickname Sheila the Pila as she pranced around town in tight-fitting clothes. Bill and Sheila had a sexual relationship for a while, and they talked about marriage, but never seriously. Bill considered them common law and encouraged her to take his last name just for kicks. He was taken by Sheila's good looks, her body, her reddish-brown hair. At that time, she was dying it. She dies it throughout this story, always concerned about her roots coming through. She had a very high libido. Epping, where they lived, was a peaceful place, and they soon experienced Sheila's fiery temper, those who lived in Epping. They were all threatened with violence by her if they ever chose to question her relationship with the much older man that they all loved and were endeared by, and Bill. Sheila quickly took control of Bill's life, his finances, and his business. His daughter, Laura, said her father was not a fearful man, but after Sheila moved in, his whole personality changed. She started working as the office manager of his chiropractic business and took over the operations. Sheila gained a reputation in Epping and nearby towns as being promiscuous through her dealings with people through this operation. She would say that Bill condoned her affairs, calling himself an old fart, and if anything happened to him, she should find herself a younger man. So she's saying that this old chiropractor of the town whom has had a couple of relationships and has kids, and he's just a lonely old man wanting to fuck a younger woman who's hot. This is our scene. And if you all have a problem with it, you can fuck off. And I'm going to fuck all your men while I'm here. Because Bill gets off on that shit. So do I a little bit. Bill had made repeated attempts to get Sheila out of his life after a while, which went against what she was saying. She's like, he's a cock. And he's like, no, I just wanted to have a relationship with a hot woman that wanted to live with me and, you know, was had titillating conversations with me with her titties in my mouth. But he is in a spot here where he wants her out. She is causing too much of a problem. And he went as far as buying her a house back in Tennessee, but she refused to leave. Bill eventually died at the age of 74 after years of dealing with this fucking bitch. In December of 2000, he died of a massive heart attack, hypertension, and arteriosclerosis. Sheila, by way of threats by gun, was able to convince the coroner that she was his wife and she was listed as such on the death certificate as a result of her accosting the coroner of this small town with a gun. Despite being married to someone else while living at the farmhouse, this ended up being the situation on the death certificate. She was seen as Sheila LaBar, barring the reality of her never actually getting married to Dr. Bill. Sheila immediately ordered Bill's body be cremated. Bill's estate, the 115-acre farm, cash, stocks and bonds, his chiropractic business, two houses in Somersworth and one in Portsmouth, would be awarded to Sheila. Bill's will backed up her claims, which completely ignored his children, who were sure she forced him to make the will. Sheila lived alone on the farm afterwards and often shared it in her bed with men she hired to help around the place. It is many people's estimation on this situation, and my own as well, that she killed Bill. So I should mention that there were relationships here that worked out with men who could combat Sheila in some way. She was turned on by men who were subservient, turned her on within herself, but she was turned on by men who would push back against her. And here we talk about Wayne Ennis, a Jamaican immigrant. Sheila had known Ennis for years before she met Bill. She'd met him while on vacation in Jamaica. So you got this hot white, she's pretty big lady, going to Jamaica and banging a bunch of Jamaicans. And the one that she chose to eventually bring home was this Wayne Ennis. She and Bill, the chiropractor, went to Jamaica, and she always made sure to cross paths with Wayne Ennis during that time. Ennis had been hit by a bicycle, and Bill had examined his spine, and that's how they met. Sheila arranged a visa after fucking Wayne Ennis for a while, so he eventually came to New Hampshire to live with Sheila and Dr. Bill. And Bill and Sheila stopped having sex once Wayne Ennis showed up because Wayne was fucking the shit out of Sheila. Sorry for all this harsh language. It's just a harsh scene. She didn't completely ignore Bill. However, she would jerk him off once in a while. She'd be like, hey, you want to get jerked off? And he'd be like, yeah, babe, yeah, sure. He's all old and laying in a chair. And she'd go jerk him off, and then she probably was jerking him off while she was getting fucked doggy style by Wayne Ennis, her Jamaican immigrant friend, husband, actually. They got married at some point. So her relationship with Wayne Ennis from Jamaica was volatile. She filed assault charges against him at one point and was granted a restraining order, but he was already in the country. Despite police getting involved more than once with Ennis from Jamaica, Sheila decided it was a good idea to marry him. Bill was disappointed when she decided to marry this Jamaican lover, but he wanted her to be happy and gave his blessing. Sheila and Wayne Ennis were married on August 22nd of 1995. Not long after, Ennis, Jamaica, began to drink a lot of rum, man. And with the constant fighting, they moved out of the farmhouse and into the apartment above the chiropractic office that Bill's cousin used to occupy. Trouble really started when Sheila's Jamaican was coming home one night and saw like a bunch of humping going on up in the fucking window of their apartment there. She made it very clear that she was getting fucked by some other guy. He comes upstairs and she's with another man. As a result of this, like, there's a big argument there. And he's like, fuck, I'm the one who's supposed to be, like, cucking other guys, fucking you. And she's like, well, I'm leveling up here, and now you're cucked. They divorce in 1996. Even though she got married and divorced, during the time she was with our old chiropractor here in Bill, she stayed with Bill, and Bill chose to stay with her. And there are reports of her chasing Bill around with a gun before he died. And Ennis from Jamaica said later, she asked me to kill him. Despite all this fucking evidence, she was never accused of having killed the chiropractor in a Dr. Wilfred Bill J. Labar, whose last name she kept. She's kept until this day. And I'm into this story in the way that I'm into speaking gossip, you know? I just want to talk to you all about this. I'm sure you've heard this story before, but you probably haven't heard it in this way, where it's like, did you hear what the fuck Sheila did? Did you hear, like, about Wayne Ennis? Did you hear, of course you heard about the doctor, but did you hear about the Jamaican that she had, you know, cucking the chiropractor? And then she cucked the Jamaican? My God. She was trying to kill him. He died. She took his whole property. What the fuck? I want to talk to you about James Jimmy Brackett as well. So this is another guy that comes through her orbit very early in the ninth grade. He had trouble reading and writing. They had met in 1989 through a mechanic who had worked on Sheila's car. Their relationship, James Brackett and Sheila's, didn't begin until about 6.5 years after having met him at the mechanics. He, Jimmy, thought that Sheila's relationship with Bill was strictly business when he started living with her in the apartment above the chiropractic clinic. He knew at the time that she was married to Wayne Ennis, but thought they were getting a divorce. He's the guy that was caught, you know, fucking, sorry, how do I say that? Making love? It's not making love, it's fucking, so I'm sorry. I mean, that's what was happening. He's the guy who was caught fucking her while Wayne Ennis decided to get a divorce from seeing it. Their relationship started out peaceful and then turned violent. Sheila claimed to be in love with Jimmy and was able to cure him eventually of his premature ejaculation problem, which is pretty easy to do. You just jerk the guy off a lot and make him jizz a lot. And it's like you just keep smacking him and telling him he's a piece of shit while he can't jizz anymore. And then when he goes to reload, he's not so eager to the next time around. I think that was her technique. A lot of guys would say, yeah, I'd just love to have a woman like blow me or jerk me off or hump me forever. And I could just, dude, you stop jizzing at a certain point and she's still punching you in the face and humping your limp dick and telling you you're a fucking loser for not being able to get it up. Eventually, you're just going to not be able to jizz quickly because there's no more jizz to jizz. So that was kind of her technique. And I'm thinking about writing a book about that based on her teachings. So stay tuned. On September 25th of 1998, police were called after a violent fight between Jimmy and Sheila. Sheila was trying to call another guy, and Jimmy Brackett used a knife to cut the phone line as she did so. And he cut Sheila's finger in the altercation. Sheila then armed herself with a pair of scissors and cut him across his forehead. This cut required several stitches. Both Jimmy Brackett and Sheila Labar were charged with felony counts of second-degree assault. What a bunch of fucking losers. What a couple of losers. I mean, you're both getting at each other, you're both calling the cops on one another, and then you both end up getting charged? Oh my God. She accused him of everything, including cheating on her, damaging her vehicle, and killing one of her rabbits. Sheila's big into rabbits, maybe because they fuck like rabbits, I don't know. She's into fucking, like just humping the shit out of stuff until it can't do anything any longer. She often scratched Jimmy's face, twice fired a gun at him, threatened to kill him 3 times and hit him in the face with a grill brush from a barbecue once, causing extreme dental trauma. And Jimmy really feared her. When she got angry, he would try to hide from her eventually. On one occasion, he hid in a horse trailer, and she took an axe to it. He was able to escape and ran for the woods as she shot a shotgun at him. And I gotta say here that I think the reason why she's into rabbits is that, you know, the way that rabbits are, they're prey animals, and the way that they react to being stressed, I think she gets off on that. She's sadistic. They would watch porn, gay porn together, and the reason why is because she liked to make it seem like to her lovers that they were gay or pedophiles. She really had a fetish about this, that the guys that she was torturing or, you know, mentally, physically torturing, sexually torturing, were pedophiles, were guys that she needed to do that to because she was now a servant of God after her coma and this justified thing. So she would put on gay porn and say it turned her on. And then Buddy's obviously going to get his dick hard because she's jerking him off. And she's like, you're a fucking fag. Those are her words. Just breaking dudes down. Sheila was seeing other men at the same time as these other relationships. There was a guy named Yvonne Blaze who knew about Jimmy and witnessed their violent fights and her calling Jimmy a pedophile. A fantasy of Sheila's was for the two men to have sex so she could watch. And Yvonne Blaze broke it off there because she was controlling, she had a temper, she was fucking crazy. Jimmy, he stayed, he really feared for his life, thought she was evil, thought that he just needed to ride this thing out while she rode his limp dick most nights and smacked him in the face, calling him a fucking pedophile. He escaped during a blizzard after one of their many fights, did Jimmy. He thought he better get away before she killed him. After getting away, he got a personalized license plate that said, I'm alive, on it. He ended up at the Crossroads shelter where he met Michael Deloge. When Sheila tried to hire Deloge, Brackett warned him about her. But Deloge, who was a little slow, didn't listen. And right now I'm going to say I use the word slow a lot here because these guys are slow. I mean, you know what slow means? What am I supposed to say? The words you want, like I'm supposed to say. I mean, he's slow. He's just a little slow to figure out what's going on. He's a good-looking guy, like a perfect target for somebody like Sheila, the Pila. He is going to be easily manipulated. She's going to get off sexually with him, and she's going to get off by mentally torturing him and physically as well, because he's a bigger guy. Like he's a fit guy. There's another guy that comes up later. His name's Kenneth County. She likes guys who are not that bright, who are kind of strong guys. I guess County's a little bit smaller, but he did try to join the military. She likes to break people down that she believes possibly could break children down. And it's all fucking nuts. I'm sorry. It's nuts. We are in the mind of her. You're in the mind of me. A bad place to be. Rosetta Stone, Konnichiwa. That means hello out there, basically, for those who don't really understand the Japanese language like I do by this point by using Rosetta Stone, but you can get up to snuff like me. Speaking a new language can create incredible opportunities. Rosetta Stone makes it easier and more immersive than ever. Rosetta Stone is the leading language learning program available on desktop, mobile, designed to fully immerse you in your chosen language for a more natural and effective learning experience. My favorite feature so far, I've mentioned it many times, is the true accent feature, and you saw that featured in the beginning, Konnichiwa, right? There are just so many things within Rosetta Stone that kind of get you primed, prepped, for learning this new language and learning it effectively. Learn faster, retain longer. Rosetta Stone immerses you in your new language naturally, helping you think and communicate with confidence. There's an intuitive learning process. You start with words, build to phrases, and progress to full sentences. You can perfect your pronunciation. The built-in true accent speech recognition technology provides you real-time feedback, making you sound more natural. You can learn anytime, anywhere. Rosetta Stone fits your lifestyle with flexible, on-the-go learning. And there's an incredible value here. You can learn for life. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, so you can learn as many languages as you want, whenever you want. You don't have to be a savant like me. You know, so far I've learned a little bit of Japanese, a little bit of Italian, a little bit of German. But, you know, work at your own pace. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Sayonara.
Looking for your next go-to smoke shop? Stop scrolling. I've got you. Headshop.com is the number one online smoke shop, already trusted by over 100,000 happy smokers, just like you. They've got it all. Dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, even THCA flower, all in one place. Need a new daily driver? Grab a smooth glass bong or a classic smoking pipe. More of a concentrate fan? Their dab rigs, e-rigs, and wax accessories are designed for smoother, harder-hitting sessions. And yes, they've even got legal THC flower. Best part? Every order ships fast and discreet, which is why thousands of smokers keep coming back. So don't waste time hopping between shops. Shop the best in dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, and THCA flower right now at headshop.com, the number one online smoke shop. Headshop.com has what you need. Check it out today. Oh, and because you're listening right now, you get 10% off your next order when you use the coupon code HSHOP at checkout. Go to headshop.com now and smoke smarter.
So Micah Deloge, who's a little slow, he was a transient who grew up in West Haven, Connecticut with his father and stepmother. In 1993, he married his girlfriend. And when she became pregnant with his son, he wasn't able to be a correct father. He had a long history of drug and alcohol abuse, and his job skills were limited. His marriage ended in a divorce, and he lost touch with his ex-wife and his son and just went back to the drugs and the alcohol. In 2003, he decided to move to New Hampshire for a fresh start, where Sheila LaPeeler was waiting for him. He lived at the Crossroads Shelter for the Homeless. He was a small man, had some developmental issues, slightly mentally challenged. He met Sheila in early 2003 when she hired him to help her at the farm that she'd stolen from the chiropractor and Bill. Both Michael's mother and stepmother thought that Sheila was good to him, and he told them that he was in love, and they're like, great, he's taken care of. This woman could be his new mom. It's amazing that she wants to have this relationship with him and have him out there on the farm where he can work and have sex with this vixen. In the summer of 2004, his stepmother, Joy Deloge, got a call in the middle of the night from Sheila. Sheila was quoting scriptures from the Bible and saying that Michael was a child molester and had molested his younger siblings. This is a trick of Sheila's, as I've mentioned before. She wants to get the family out of her victim's life, and she wants to make her victim seem like a perpetrator, and then this gives her complete control over this individual, a preferably slow individual. And his stepmother, she could hear him in the background while Sheila's on the call. He's talking slowly and with a slur. After that call, they never heard from him again, his family. In July of 2004, his dad received a letter supposedly written by Michael telling the dad that he and Joy, meaning Michael and his wife Joy, had an intimate relationship right under his nose. And in that letter, Michael also admitted that he was a child molester. So he's like, hey, dad, I was fucking your wife and I was molesting all the kids in the house. This letter, written by Michael under duress from Sheila. His siblings denied this idea that he had molested them. In the winter of 2004, 2005, A neighbor saw a man walking past their property from the direction of the farm, Sheila's farm now. He appeared to have been beaten and very ill. This was Michael Deloche. His face was cut so badly, he was dripping blood and his skin looked jaundiced. When they came up to ask him if he needed help, he just kind of waved them away. He looked like he'd been hit by a train. They were the ones who had sold the property initially to the chiropractor and Bill. Bill ended up with Sheila. Sheila probably killed Bill. And now Sheila's owning this property and just bringing young men in there to help her with work and fuck up. And he's walking past their property as neighbors now, all fucked up. This would happen a lot. The neighbor had seen other men in the past in the same condition, and they would later say that Michael Deloche was the worst they had seen walk by their property. The man of this couple who came out to see if Deloche was okay asked if he was okay, and all he muttered, Michael Deloche, was, quote, Sheila. In March 2005, Sheila filed a suit in small claims court saying that Michael Deloche owed her $5,000. They settled out of court a few days later with him signing an agreement that he would pay her back. She took him to his bank and made him a checking account that was joined with her account. Sheila also made a tape of him confessing to being a child molester, which I'll play later. He confessed to killing family pets, committing arson, and worshiping the devil on these recordings. After this tape was made, no one ever saw him again, and the neighbors there later felt very guilty about never really figuring out why all these men would come into the house and come out all beaten up and walking past the property, just muttering, quote, Sheila. Fuck. You imagine if it was women coming out of a man's house? It's Ted Bundy's house. And they're walking out of Ted Bundy's house past the neighbors, and they come up and go, hey, girl, are you okay? And they go, Bundy. You're going to call the fucking cops. But because it's men, they're just like, well, I guess there's some kind of trouble we don't want to get involved in here. He's probably to blame in some way. So after these tapes, which I'll play some of later, he was never seen again. Sheila had taken his name off of the bank account, said he no longer worked for her, and that he had gone to New Haven, where they make good pizza, apparently. Good undercarriage, which Sheila had, to her credit. All right, let's talk about Kenneth M. County, Ken County. He was born July 18th, 1991, in Wilmington, Massachusetts. He had a learning disability. He had the mental capacity of a 12-year-old. He had moved out of his mother's house after a failed attempt to serve in the Army. He got his picture taken. I saw it. Good-looking little guy. He and his mother... I got to stop here and say that some of the... I said earlier that some of these guys were, like, bigger guys. And, like, I don't know why the fuck I said that. I just had it in my mind because they're, like, workers and he was in the Army. No, they're little guys. I'm completely wrong on that in my previous writing there. Completely wrong. These are smaller, mentally incapacitated men. And I was wrong on that. And I'll admit it. Unlike Bill Burr, I'll admit that I'm fucking wrong. Kenneth and his mother were extremely close, and they saw each other or spoke on the phone daily. He worked at Shields Car Wash, and his employer described him as a simple but dedicated worker, barely literate. His roommate, Eric Ingram, said he was easygoing, responsible, and lonely. And that's a nice way of saying that he was, you know, slow. Ken County registered with a phone sex service called Telemates, which is how he met Sheila. And a phone sex service back in those days was where you would leave a message in the system. Someone could click on that message. It's like a voicemail. And you listen to what they have to say about themselves. And then there's a phone number, and you can call that number to talk to them directly if you're interested in what they had to say on that recording. Sheila was tapped into this because she wanted to meet men that were that low, that were that needy, because she knew if they were needy, then they were easily manipulated, especially by a woman who was good-looking at the time. Later, not so much. When you grow up good-looking and you have the, like, that power over people with your looks, And then as you age, you get older and bigger and, you know, not as attractive. You still have that confidence and you still have like that ability to affect men in the way that you did when you had all of the physical attributes that naturally did it for you. You have that expectation that you can draw that. And that confidence means so much in so many ways in life. And that's just a little thing I wanted to drop there for you to push you forward in life. If you got old and, you know, a little fucking out of sorts, out of whack physically, hey, you still got your mental, where you can still rope in those young men. You still got a hand, don't you? You still got a grip, a mouth, eyes, words. You're fine. Fuck these men in every way possible. Take everything that they fucking got. So over the phone, as they started talking, Kenneth and Sheila, Sheila told him, I don't like your name. I need to call you Adam because your name, Ken, reminds me of my deceased brother, Kenneth. So I'm going to call you Adam and I'm your Eve and we're going to start something great here. They soon made plans to meet in person on Valentine's Day at the Ashworth by the Sea Hotel in Hampton Beach. They ended up in Sheila's Cadillac in the hotel parking lot where they smoked pot and had sex twice. He was in love. Sheila told him he should move in with her. 4 days after their first date, Kenneth told his roommate Sheila was coming to pick him up and they were going to spend the night together. Kenneth ended up leaving with her but took none of his belongings. He told his roommate Eric he would be back the next day. They're living in like an assisted living situation, I believe. They're both slow. And Eric's like, okay, cool, man, bye. Good. That's fucking amazing that you're with a girl that fucks you till you jizz and then does it again and then jerks you off and yells in your face that you're a fucking limp dick piece of shit. That's fucking hot. Kenneth never returned to the apartment, although the memory of what happened there lived forever in Eric's mind as he masturbated over the toilet. According to Sheila, it was Kenneth County who asked if he could stay with her, and he had started telling her stories about how he owed his parents money and they were pressuring him to pay it back. He wanted to divorce his parents and said that his mother had forced him to have sex with her since he was very young. This all according to Sheila, and this is brainwashing. On February the 20th of 2006, Kenneth's mother, Carolyn, called Kenneth at Sheila's place. And when Sheila put Kenneth on the phone, he sounded like he was crying. Sheila then grabbed the phone and told his mother, quote, Kenny is fucking 24 years old, so leave him alone. We are happy. And hung up. The next day, feeling panicked, Mom called Kenneth at work at the Shell car wash, but his boss said he didn't show up and never was going to hear from him again. On February the 24th of 2006, Kenneth's mother filed a missing persons report. Police then went to Sheila Labar's farm, the burn farm, they'll let her call it, where they found him. He was alive. He confirmed he was not being held there against his will. He had a black eye and jaundiced-looking skin, and his hands were all bloated, and he was stuttering a lot, but they knew that he was slow, so chalked it up to that, and Sheila told them that he had been in a car accident. She was taking care of him. Kenneth was next seen on March 11th of 2006 at a Walmart with visible cuts on his face, burn marks on him, and he was looking jaundiced. He was quiet. They returned to that same Walmart a few days later, and this time Sheila was pushing Kenneth in a wheelchair. Sheila became angry and very defensive when employees asked if Kenneth was okay, and she said, hey, don't worry about it. He was in a car accident. I'm tending to his wounds. We're just here to pick up a bunch of fucking stuff that you use to bury and burn bodies. They became concerned and they called the police. Sheila left, pushing Kenneth in a wheelchair with a bunch of diesel containers, yellow diesel containers, stacked up all around him, him in the midst of all their shopping, like a part of the groceries. I shouldn't laugh. I mean, horrible things happened to him here. But that is, he's like kind of tucked in. Hi. Oh, shit. Fuck. I think she's going to burn me with like the stuff that she puts into these containers later. Hey, bye. He could have been a Walmart greeter, this guy. but he's off to get fucking murdered. Nothing against Walmart greeters. Some of the friendliest people I've ever met in my life. I feel like I'm doing them more a favor than they're doing me a favor just by saying hi back to them. But having worked with people with disabilities, I understand that it's necessary to give them jobs in such fields. It's very unfortunate that Kenneth's job here was to be prey for a sadistic serial killer. On March the 22nd of 2006, a friend of Sheila's, Michelle Bennett, visited the farm. Sheila told Michelle that she had kicked Kenny out because he was a pedophile. And she is burning something on the front lawn when Michelle shows up, and it smells really bad. Sheila says it's just garbage. Kenneth Kenny's mother, Carolyn, filed a second missing persons report. On March the 24th of 2006, police arrive at the farm for a wellness check, but there's no one home. They look around the property. They find a burn pile about 35 feet away from the house. In the fire was a 55-gallon barrel, a pile of hay, a knife, clippers, and in the hay was a bone with a ball joint at one end that looked to be human and had soft tissue still attached to it. Just as police were about to enter the house, Sheila drove up. They told her they were looking for Kenneth County. She said he had left and let them search the home. They asked about the fire. She said, I burned my dead rabbits in those fires. They asked about the bone. She's like, it's a fucking deer bone. They questioned her about that bone and further. And she's like, I'm fucking telling you. It's just dead animals on the property. It's a big farm here. Remember, this is the biggest property in this county. And also remember, sorry to laugh there, that's Kenneth County. She asks them, well, tells them, to leave her property if they do not have a search warrant. The next morning, police return with that warrant to search the property again. The bone they saw previous was gone. The fire is out. When they ask where Kenneth is, Sheila points to a Walmart bag and says, he's in the bag. They take her to the station for further questioning, and officers continue the search. From the burn pile, they seize a large pair of pruning shears and a set of hedge shears. More bone fragments and a number of empty fuel containers are nearby. The interrogation continues. Sheila's like, I'm just fucking around about the bag. I don't know what's in the bag. Cat's out of the bag, I guess. I fuck around with men. I'm the town slut. I'm Sheila the Peeler. You guys are all picking on me. She said, I just woke up on March 22nd and Kenny was gone. 3 days previous here in the year 2006. She's talking in circles and goes on about Kenneth being a pedophile and says she has tape recordings of him admitting he was, which I'll play later. She told the police that he was suicidal. He may have taken off into the woods to kill himself because he couldn't go to prison. They're looking in that bag and they just find like a bunch of shit, a bunch of garbage and like ashes and whatever. But this property is filled with ghosts, as they'll soon find. They couldn't get her to admit to anything other than slapping Kenny. On March the 26th, forensics confirmed the photos of the bones were most likely from a human hand and possibly the end of a forearm bone. That photo was taken when they first showed up. One of them took a photo, and that bone that you can no longer find was a forearm. Another search warrant was issued that allowed police full access to the farmhouse and the entire property for a thorough search. Police began a search of the farmhouse land, some of the neighbors' land who sold this land and saw, you know, young men walking past, muttering Sheila. Farmland, rural subdivisions. This all lasted 17 days. So they started to talk to some of the men who had been around Sheila, because there were many men who she wished death upon them. I'm just fucking with lyrics, obviously, from 50 Cent, many men. But she fucks from lyrics. What is it? You'll hear more about that later. I guess she had it coming. I guess she had it fucking coming. She sings this song a lot about people who had it coming. And you will hear her sing this in a little bit. I'm just dragging you through, just dangling that carrot. She had a boyfriend, one of her many boyfriends. His name was Philip Sulos. Sulos had been to the farm, but only to work, and had met Sheila through bracket and had also met Michael Deloge when he was living on the farm. He testified at a trial that he witnessed Sheila getting violent with Deloge and saw her beating him with a stick so badly he fell on the floor in the fetal position crying. Sheila helped him get up, tended to his wounds, and carried on as if nothing had happened. Then there was Stephen Martello, 50 years old, a big guy weighing 350 pounds, with long hair. He had it all tied back in a ponytail. He was originally from Massachusetts. After the searches at the farm and police interrogation, Sheila went on the lam for a bit there before she got caught and arrested and brought in. The case against her was growing, but she was again released into society. On March the 28th, Martello, this big fucking trucker, picked up Sheila alongside Interstate 293 near Manchester. She was standing in the breakdown lane. She asked for a ride to Dorchester, Massachusetts. He hadn't had the radio on all day and hadn't heard about the APB that was out that she, Sheila, with her description, was wanted by police. He offered to take her as far as Derry. She told him her name was Case and she would pay him for the ride. He understood this to mean sexually. Sheila paid for the gas and flashed a wad of cash. While they drove, she told him her whole life story, which he thought she exaggerated a lot of. He told her about his troubles and his marriage and financially did this trucker. The whole time he's like, oh my God, she's like, you know, ready to roll. She got a dole of cash, a roll of cash, and we're going to get some drugs and we're going to get some, you know, drinks and we're going to get a hotel and I'm going to fucking bang this chick. And that is what ends up happening. But in the meantime, he's spilling his guts to her. Which, when it comes to spilling your guts to somebody like Sheila, and she's asking to know a lot of things about you, you think that, oh, wow, this person cares about me. No, they're collecting information to hold against you in the future. You got to be very careful with people. There is good and evil in this world. There are good people who will ask you things about yourself in order to get to know you better so that they can possibly help you or relate to you or just have a good time, you know, get to know you better. And there are people who will ask you questions about yourself in order to use that information against you later after they fuck with you and use this to blackmail you later in order for you not to spill the beans on how they fucked with you. Good and evil. And often, evil is guised as good. This trucker, he shares that he's in financial and marriage trouble. She tells him, I can help you with the marriage shit. I mean, if you're not getting laid, I'll lay you. But if you're hurt financially, I have property. And you can come out there and work for me. They're flirting like crazy. They stop at a CVS and she gets hair dye. A constant problem with her, always with the roots. She's always talking about her roots because she wants to stay like a dark-haired woman or a blonde-haired woman. She doesn't want these gray roots coming through. So she gets her hair dye. She gets condoms at the CVS. And Martello, the trucker, he's sure now that he's going to get laid. He was unsure, though. Since when do you pick up a random woman on the highway flashing money and all she wants to do is have sex with you when you're a 350-pound greasy trucker? While she's in the CVS, he calls the Manchester police to check if anyone had escaped the women's prison or the mental hospital. That's smart. I mean, he's like, this shit doesn't just fall out of the sky. She's clearly got to be an escaped convict or escaped mental patient to want to just give me money and a job and have sex with me. No one had escaped, so he was like, okay, I guess this is the real deal somehow. They book a room with a king-size bed. It had to be king-size because they're both fucking enormous. And not trying to be rude. Yeah, I am. So they go to room 427 at the Quality Inn. The sex was good. She's a little aggressive, which helps. Until you're spent and she's still smacking your limp dick and shoving her fucking hands in your mouth and telling you that you're a piece of shit. Like, that's a little much, but eventually you re-up and you can get back into it again. So this trucker, he's all done. They're all done. Sheila's finally spent too, and he goes to put his condoms full of semen into the garbage. And Sheila, she says, quote, flush those. If you don't, the chambermaids will find them. And they'll pull your cum out and stuff it in their vaginas to impregnate themselves. End quote. Yeah, Sheila, like chambermaids at a shitty fucking motel want to stuff their vaginas full of trucker jizz. But he believes her, so he's like, oh, yeah, fucking right. Yeah, I don't want to have more kids. And he flushes his condoms down the toilet. It's all just this weird control stuff. Sheila, she stopped being nice and told this trucker that her ex was a pedophile and pedophiles must die. She told him not to tell anyone about their encounter. And if he did, a sex offender that she knew would get his son and pedophile him. She's fucking crazy, this bitch. I know words like crazy and bitch aren't ones that you're supposed to throw around anymore. They fit here, man. Fucking, she's a crazy bitch. Sheila then told this trucker that she had died once and talked to God, but he sent her back. Quote, you just had sex with an angel, bud. End quote. The trucker, after hearing this and flushing his fucking sludgy, his scumbags, you know, that's what where the term scumbag comes from, is jizz-filled condom. Scumbag, that's a scumbag. This guy flushes his scumbags and says, I gotta go, I gotta pick my son up from school. Sheila asks him if he's busy later and asks if he'll come back. He says, for sure, I'll be back after I drop my son off. He doesn't want to offend her. He gives her his cell number that she writes down backwards, saying, quote, it's code. That way, if my boyfriend ever found it, he wouldn't know what was going on. That way, he can't come and fuck your son. End quote. He gives her a quick hug and a kiss and leaves her in the hotel room after she says that. And then he never saw her again because that evening, when he saw Sheila on the 6 o'clock news and saw her photo, he called her into police and told them where she was. And she was in that hotel room, that motel room, and she was arrested. Once Sheila was charged and brought in, her farmhouse could be thoroughly searched. She's on the lam this whole time, right? And within that home, this farmhouse, they find video and cassette tapes. They find blood and gore and bones and... like, it's a fucking horror house. You think that Ed Gein was bad? Fuck. I don't know why everyone's so, like, bent out of shape about Ed Gein. Leave Ed Gein alone. He dug up a few bodies and fucking strung them up and wore skin as an outfit or whatever. I really have never found Ed Gein that interesting. I especially don't find him interesting after the complete lies that were told in Monster on Netflix about Ed Gein. No. I'm wrong. I talked to Kent about this, and I think he's right in that they made that based on all the bullshit surrounding Ed Gein. They based like that whole monster story on Netflix that you've probably watched or watched half of it on all of the bullshit surrounding it. I think it was pretty good, but I do get a little pissed off that they made certain victims. I almost had her name. Second victim. Borden, did not have a relationship with Ed Gein. And in the story, in the show, Monster, she was like fucking him and he was fucking her and they were in love or something. They have no proof that any of that happened. Anyways, where the fuck am I? I think that they should do a monster on this. This is a true monster. This is real evil. This is somebody who's seeking out victims, bringing them back to her lair, torturing them. Physically, sexually, mentally, and burning them afterwards. This is something that people should check out. This is something that could happen in real life. We often overlook women as predators, and they're out there. Trust me. I've had a few in my time. I will never talk about it because, I'll be honest, I thought it was pretty sweet. But I still have nightmares about it. All right, so fucking I'm all over the place. I'm trying to act nuts. I mean, I am nuts, but I mean, I'm just trying to get into the groove here, and let's taper off here a little bit. Let's calm down. Everybody fucking calm down. Her house was searched. Within, they found video and cassette tapes. She tortured her victims, physically, sexually, but most of all, mentally. This torture became obvious when police listened to the tapes. Here, let's play a few clips from those tapes. But first, I must say that we're going to hear Kenneth County, whose mother dared to talk back to Sheila over the phone, and whose father showed concern for his son's well-being. We're going to have a few clips here of Sheila clearly manipulating Kenneth into stating false information to justify her imprisonment and torture of the young man with the mind of a 12-year-old, picked by Sheila, like many of her victims, for this aspect, as it would make it easier to manipulate such men. What you're about to hear is the definition of a leading question session. And considering how Kenneth's hands were 5 times too big in the footage that they got from the Walmart, when they showed, you'll see it in the show notes if you want to look for it, his hands are too fucking big. He's in a wheelchair. His eyes are all bruised and his skin looks jaundiced. Considering all this, especially the part of the hands, in those photos, he's being pushed around by Sheila in the video, but the photos that they take close up, he's being pushed around by Sheila in a wheelchair. Kenneth, because his hands are so big, he definitely had been tied up, way too tight around the wrists. And I think he was tied up in this way with his hands ballooning during the recording you're about to hear.
State your name.
My name is Kenneth M. County.
Your date of birth? Did you and I talk briefly with your father last night?
Yes.
Did he scream at both of us?
Yes.
Did he make that comment, this is not the end of it? Did your father very angrily say, this is not the end of this?
Yes.
Are you afraid of your father?
Yes.
Do you want any contact with this man?
No.
Do you want any contact with your mother, Carolyn Lodge, who lives in Billerica, Mass?
No.
Did Carolyn Lodge make a false missing person report on you with the Wilmington Police Department?
Yes.
Are you missing?
No.
Are you living with me by choice?
Yes.
Are you happy?
Yes.
Are you safe?
Yes.
That's fucking brutal. That is hers. I don't have to tell you what that is. She is documenting that he's safe. Yeah, he sounds real safe. Now she's going to interrogate him about being a pedophile. Again, this is all recordings that she left for the county in the area about Kenneth County. When people were questioning whether or not, whoa, there's a spider on my microphone. Holy fuck. Fuck. That could have crawled right into my mouth. You're about to hear. Oh, man, that's a pretty good spider. You're about to hear her interrogate Kenneth about being a pedophile. He's tied up. And there are many tapes. There's like hundreds of tapes where she talks to men that she had kept captive and makes them admit that they're pedophiles. It's all her way of blackmailing them if they later say all the things that she had done to them. But this is an example of it. Here's her, Sheila, the peeler, interrogating Kenneth County about being a pedophile. And I'm insecure. Like, I know I repeat myself. I know that I, you know, go fucking tangents and all over the place and stuff. But I mean, I'm slow too. A spider just went into my mouth and I ate it, okay? Oh, and she makes him admit that his mother molested him as well.
This tape recording is being made in my living room in Epi, New Hampshire. Present with me is Kenneth Michael County. Has Carolyn Lodge ever sexually molested you as a child?
Yes.
All right, I'm sorry for the really difficult to hear footage there, but I want you to get a sense of her cadence, her tone, the way in which she's prosecuting Kenneth on these tapes and presenting it to whoever would listen to it later as if it's a confession or as if it's in a court of law and not in her farmhouse living room with him tied up, beaten up. Sick shit. She kills him. He gets burned in a pit. So we're going to move on here to Michael DeLoge, 36, who I mentioned earlier. So Kenneth County and Michael DeLoge are the two known victims in this case. Michael DeLoge is considered missing since July of 2005. He's seen on video, heard on cassette tapes. Michael is clearly, I'll say it again, slow, like Kenneth. And hey, I really mean that to be delicate when I say they're slow. These men are slow in an endearing way. They seem gentle. It's really sad.
You really messed me up. And if it wasn't for Sheila, I wouldn't know half the things I know.
November 3rd, 2004. This is an interview with Michael Todd DeLoge. A short, going bald, but not yet. Going gray, tremendously fast. Evil, brown or hazel eyed, little munchkin who makes his living off women because you are attracted to what? What attracts you? What are you called?
Children. What are you called? Pedophile. So that is from the Discovery Plus Signs of a Psychopath. He had it coming episode. I have it in the show notes as well. Children. I'm attracted to children. What do they call you? Pedophile. Guy's beaten down. Like, fuck. She is taking men, slow men, into her web and as a spider crawling in and sucking the life of them while recording it on, you know, audio tape, videotape. And you heard a little bit of it there. She's taken to trial, which began on May 13th of 2008. Sheila the Peeler was charged with two counts of first-degree murder. Before opening statements, they took the jury past the Walmart where Sheila went with County on two occasions and then onto the property to view the farmhouse. And so the jury was very familiar with all the locations and talked and heard eyewitness testimony from those at the Walmart and saw exactly the spot in which we're talking about here at the farm, which was much like Ed Gein's farm. Sheila was also brought to the property in a separate vehicle, and they had attached a device that would shock her should she try to run off. She tried to explain all the areas of the property to the jury, and they were like, okay, wow. Fuck, she did this shit. Sheila's defense attorney stated that her behavior during and after the murders was clearly a case of insanity. Anne Rice, who was the prosecutor, not the writer of all those vampire books, Anne Rice gave the opening statements for the prosecution, stating that Sheila LaBarre knew exactly what she was doing when she murdered and dismembered Michael DeLoge and Kenneth County. Several witnesses were called, including the men who survived Sheila, whom I mentioned previous, who all described her as being controlling, had a temper, and was violent towards them. Sheila's sister, Lynn, testified about her physical and sexual abuse that she'd suffered at the hands of her father and other men she known as uncles that were brought into the home. The final witness for the defense was a Dr. Roger Gray, who examined Sheila to determine if she was insane. His diagnosis was that she had schizoaffective disorder and a delusional disorder and was psychotic, although other doctors found her not to be. There was no place in her world where she felt safe. This doctor said people used her and no one ever protected her. She definitely thought that she was doing the right thing when she was on her mission from God after being in that coma after the suicide attempt. She thought that these men were pedophiles. Bill, the chiropractor, really loved her. He was a father figure to her, which is why her condition deteriorated after his death. She needed a dad, I guess. This is why she did everything that she did. She says, after she killed Bill, everything went fucking off the rails and she got lost in thinking that everyone was against her. Sheila admitted that when she killed Deloge, she wanted to punish him for being a pedophile. And the way she did this was by beating him across his head with a chain as he lay dying for 4 or 5 days before burning him. Sheila said she killed Kenneth County by accident while torturing him, and she actually had genuine feelings for him. This Dr. Gray testified that Sheila had an abnormal interest around unusual sexual practices that probably led back to her childhood. She would get aroused by the idea of child molestation. She enjoyed sadomasochistic acts, sex. She just had intense hypersexuality. These are all things you could say about any male serial killer, by the way. You wouldn't say them about them. You'd just say that he's a sex fucking freak, a sadist, serial killer. But we're getting deep when it comes to a woman here. The prosecution called Dr. Marcella Sorg, the bone expert, who examined the bones found in the burn area, the many burn pits on the farm. This doctor testified that the fires had to have been so hot, 1,100 degrees to be exact, for all the DNA mostly that they found in these bones and in whatever was left over to have been destroyed. The fire must have been stoked for the bones to burn so thoroughly. So she was feeding these fires. It just didn't happen out of fucking nowhere. Whatever. Using an x-ray of County's hand, they were able to match bone fragments to his left, middle, and ring fingers. Some teeth were found, but not as many as would be expected. And this Dr. Sorg believed that some of the teeth were removed from the root because the roots remained. I'm laughing, but she's pulling fucking teeth. It's like pulling teeth with you, Kenneth, to get the truth out of you about being a pedophile. I can picture that. She's yanking his teeth out from the roots. Some teeth were found, but not as many as would be expected, as Dr. Sorg believed that some of the teeth were removed as the roots remained. But the crown, which could be used to identify the victims, had been removed. So an expert in dental forensics who worked in identifying victims after plane crashes said he never once encountered a crash or a case where the roots of teeth were present, but the crown's missing. Even crashes at high speed and powerful explosions would not separate teeth in that way. In this case, the killer had broken the victim's teeth and removed the part that could be used to make an identification. So she's smashing the teeth out of these guys, pulling their teeth even, and then removing the crowns because she feels that that could be used in the identification of her victims. State Trooper John Encarnacio, a crime scene photographer, took the stand. He was involved in the sifting of the septic tank's contents where Delonge's birth certificate was found. The video recording he took in the search showed two burn piles. In one was a screen. Sheila had used this screen to sift through the ashes and pull out bone fragments and things like metal from teeth. In her garage was a chainsaw and a gas can. The inside of the home was in complete disarray. The stovetop covered in ashes. The oven was filthy, ash-covered, and caked with burnt material. The beds had no mattresses. Couches and chairs had no cushions. A container of bleach sat in the bathroom sink, and a sledgehammer rested in a corner of another room. There was a notebook found that made mention of, quote, Daniel 3, and, quote, burned ashes flushed. Detective Steve Rowland testified that he had collected all this as evidence, and it seemed that there definitely would have been more victims, though enough time had passed for them to have passed through their ability to detect those. And upon entering the home, he said there was a mildew and vomit smell, a bad odor from the washing machine as well. There was a vent in the living room that seemed to be caked in some shit. This all would be later tested to be vomit from Kenneth County. Remember, that's a person, not a place. This investigator discovered blood in 100 places throughout the house, the stove, kitchen cabinets, and the kitchen, dining room, and living room walls. She was dragging Kenneth all through the house, beating him up wherever she could. He's vomiting because of the beatings, the lack of food, the treatment, and it's very clear. The jury wasn't convinced after all this evidence being presented to them, being brought to the farm, and listening to Sheila speak. that she was insane. So they found her guilty and sentenced her to serve two life sentences for first-degree murder. The victim families broke out in sobs at this announcement, and some rushed towards the jurors, thanking them. They thought that she was going to get away with it again, and they're just sobbing in front of the jurors, bowing before them, thanking them for this sentence. The jurors themselves were then moved to tears. Sheila had taken God knows how many young men, stragglers, in a world moving too fast for them. Sheila the Peeler is considered a serial killer, as there were toes found, the bones of toes, found in the fire pit that were not identified but confirmed to not be from Delosier County, and so there could possibly be many more victims. Daniel and Louise Harvey, who had sold the farm to chiropractor Bill sometime in the 1970s and were neighbors, said that his young girlfriend and Sheila, who took over the place and probably killed him, she was a piece of work. They said this, quote, "You haven't lived until you've met someone like Sheila," end quote. I don't know what the fuck that means. Does it mean that you just don't know what life is? Like, you just don't know what's possible to come at you in life until you've met somebody like Sheila? Maybe that's what they mean. I mean, usually when you say you haven't lived until you've, like, rode the roller coaster at fucking Wonderland, or you haven't lived until you've gone to Disneyland, you haven't lived until you've gotten a blowjob after your sack's been drained three times. That's what they mean, but you haven't lived until you met Sheila? What the fuck does that mean? I think it means you haven't seen what is capable in this life until you've met a person like Sheila. I feel that way about a lot of people that I've met. I feel that way about a lot of people that I meet who say, oh, it sounds like, you know, you got to give them a break, or people like that, you got to have some heart for it. It's like, have you ever lived with a person like that? Or have you just heard about that? You act like you care about homeless people and stuff. Have you ever been homeless or worked with the homeless or sat down with a homeless person and smoked crack with them underneath a bridge all night and listened to their fucking thoughts and feelings? Are you just saying these things? Because until you meet some of this stuff in life, until you meet a Sheila or a deranged homeless person or a fucking off-the-wall vampiric gay guy, until you see these people and see what's possible within these groups of people, you don't understand how dangerous every aspect of life could possibly be. Yeah, sure, things can be great if everything you roll into is harmless, but there's so much harm out there that is waiting for you, and if you're not prepared for it, then you're going to get harmed. And you could just be a slow kid growing up and everybody takes care of you. And then they're like, hey, you need some responsibility and here's an assisted living facility for you to live in. And then some vixen comes by, drags you out to her farm, tells your mom to fuck off and beat you off for a long time. Beat you off until your dick falls off, and then she just slams you in the face with a sledgehammer and burns your bones and tells your mom to fuck off. I don't know. I'm crazy. I like to fall back on that these days. I'm crazy. When I'm in this booth, I'm crazy. And not really. Just trying to be in order to get close to it. You know, they say that it's not completely clear why Sheila did it, why she was this way. Personally, I think it's fairly obvious. Sheila got off on torturing men. She liked the power. She enjoyed their pain. Physical, mental, sexual. I think she's pretty close to a typical male serial killer. Bring a victim to a secluded place, have your way with them before killing them. There's money involved in some cases to extract from them. There's a lot of like sex and torture, like I just said. We don't really question the motive much when it comes to men. But suddenly with Sheila the Peeler, it's like, what's this all about? There must be more to this. This is a serial killer, a sadistic psychopath. And the reason she did this, well, she would concoct that these men were pedophiles to justify what she did to them. But the cold truth, I guess, is like what Sheila, a former country music singer and songwriter, was caught singing in that angelic voice with demonic lyrics. A tune I've been humming for weeks is that they had it coming. I guess they take it away, Sheila.
punishment for you. I guess you had it coming.